This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey you, yeah you, on the job site. Did you know that a big portion of people who listen to Joy at work, just like you? Right now, times are very tough financially, and without your support, Joy may not be around to help you through your work day. So tell your workmates, your next door neighbour, and even your mum to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You are on Joy 94.9, Saturday Magazine. I'm Macca. Here's Tass.
Thank you, Macca. And our next guest is speaking to us all the way from the US. So let's see if the technology holds up this morning. We are going to be speaking with Jim Stanford, who's an economist and the director of the Centre for Future Work as part of the Australia Institute at the University of Sydney. Good morning to you, Jim.
Good morning, Tass. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Great. We have a great line, so we can hear you very clearly.
Yeah, wonderful.
Jim, you recently wrote a piece that was published in The Conversation called Healthy Humans Drive the Economy. Were you arguing in your paper that perhaps you need a healthy population in order to have a healthy economy?
That's exactly what I was arguing. And I mean, that honestly, that sounds like such a simple thing to say, such an obvious thing to say. You know, I went to school 10 years of my adult life to get a PhD in economics. And I didn't need 10 years to figure that out. It is human beings who make things happen, right? We get out of bed on Monday morning. We go off to our job. We do our job. We produce some kind of useful good or service. We make money, and then we go and spend the money, right, as fast as we made it. In fact, you know, Taz, thanks to the miracle of credit cards, we spend it sometimes before we make it. But it's human beings at every step of the way. And for some reason, our political leaders and business leaders often forget that. You know, they start talking in generic statistical terms about the economy and GDP and stock markets. And I think that's how we ended up with this false choice during COVID between the health of the economy and the health of the population. This idea that there's a trade-off, that we had to open up in order to protect the economy.
I find it particularly frustrating, Jim, when I hear commentators and business leaders in particular talk about there needs to be a balance between health and the economy. Now, I ask them, what does that mean? Yes. Which bit of the balance are you focusing on here? Mm-hmm. And at which point...
You're quite right. You're quite right to interrogate that idea, and that idea of a false choice usually is motivated by some kind of narrow business interest. You know, like I think a business person understands that if there's a pandemic, that's going to be bad for business. Yet they're still often very short-sightedly thinking of, but how am I going to get enough revenue next week to pay a certain bill? And so then they say, well, for the sake of the economy, we have to open up. But, you know, you have to join the dots on this. If you do open up, as we did, you know, and let it rip, then more people are going to get sick. More workers are going to be homesick. This has been one of the big challenges in the last few weeks. And that is going to be much worse for the economy. So the reality is, these things that they did with Omicron, supposedly to protect the economy, have actually damaged the economy as badly as any lockdown ever did.
Because what we've got is, you know, they're calling it the shadow lockdown. So there are businesses, and, you know, I can see that in Fitzroy Street here, Tass, and, you know, where there are businesses that aren't open because they can't get staff, and then if they do get staff, they don't have the customers. So it's, you know, and businesses say they'd rather it was actually a lockdown, so they knew a start and potentially an end date, and that they'd have access to the assistance. Are you ever amused, Jim, that a lot of the organisations that support business and that advocate for tax reform and small government and budget surpluses all of a sudden want budget deficits and spending
and handouts
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's call it business class welfare.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good term for it. And you're quite right. There's no consistency in that. You know, they'll argue for both at the same time, frankly. They'll in the same paragraph say, I want lower taxes, but I want the government to give me money. And that, in a way, that is the irony of the current situation. Business, in part because government listened to them, business has the worst of both worlds right now. First of all, you've got a shadow lockdown. In fact, in Sydney, the level of economic activity is actually lower, yes, according to the bank statistics, than it was during the lockdown. So it's a shadow lockdown that's even worse. But it's got no end date, obviously, and it doesn't have the sort of government support for business or for workers that we did during the actual lockdown. So, again, because they forgot the human element in the economy, these politicians and business leaders have really shot themselves in the foot and shot us in the foot.
In your paper, you talk about a public policy failure. Can you extrapolate on what you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I'm in North America right now, of course, so I'm one step removed, but I go back and forth. I was in Australia in December. Australia had a lot to be proud of in terms of how the first stages of the pandemic were handled, and, you know, in part because it's an island continent, of course, and had the capacity to limit entry to the country better, but also because of some of the very strong measures that were taken, of course, the long, hard Melbourne lockdown. And so we had fewer infections, way fewer deaths, and, by the way, a much stronger economy through all that. Australia's economic performance was among the best in the world, in precisely because we did a better job of stopping contagion. So from that success, what happened next? Well, then we suddenly heard arguments about how, well, we just have to live with COVID. We have to take wickets from COVID and open it up. And in this way, we kind of snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. And now we have Australia with one of the worst infection rates. We got 70 deaths a day, which is obviously disproving the idea that Omicron is mild somehow. And we've got a double dip recession. So neither for health nor for the economy has this been advantageous. And the irony was we had such an excellent record up until that point.
And then when you add into that an upcoming federal election, it's not looking good, is it?
I do think that the politics and the optics of it also played a role in this decision. Like, I'm honestly shaking my head saying, why on earth, you know, when I was in Sydney in December and I saw them take off the passport rules, take off the mask rules, take off the capacity limits, and Perrottet was saying, you know, we're just going to live with this. We're free now. We've defeated it. And I could see in an instant, you know, obviously the bars fill up, the cafes fill up, the stores fill up. Yeah, that's right. Hospitals fill up. You're absolutely right. And they're still filling up. You know, why would they do that? It certainly went against the health advice and the scientific advice. And I think part of it was pressure from business, as we've talked about. I think part of it was they just kind of grasped at an opportunity to declare victory and stand up top and say, you know, I've won your freedom back. Now we'll party and hope that they would get some political benefit from that. I thought of it, it was reminiscent of, do you remember in the Iraq war when George Bush put on a military outfit and stood on the aircraft carrier and said, we've won.
Mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished, and it was nowhere near accomplished. And it was a short-lived moment. And now, of course, I think both Perrottet in particular and Mr. Morrison are going to pay a big political price for this failure because people don't understand why things suddenly went south.
Well, we have seen the New South Wales Premier backtrack on a couple of policy decisions on a number of occasions. There was one day when he said, relax, you don't have to wear a mask. And then the next day he came back and he said, well, now you do have to wear a mask.
I think it's a good idea.
In these environments, it's a really good idea that you do so. So the shift from, you know, no responsibility to personal responsibility and then to all of a sudden mandating, it was interesting. In fact, in some respects, it was quite amusing to watch all of that.
As amusing as a gallows.
Yeah, you're right. And unfortunately, I mean, you know, you're better to admit that you're wrong and try to change. But unfortunately, once the genie's out of the bottle and Omicron certainly travels fast, then it's hard to play catch up, and that's what we've been doing since. And unfortunately, part of the government's response as well to the number of illnesses with Omicron has just been to water down the rules regarding isolation and quarantine and protections that close contacts should take in order to try and get more people back to work, even if they happen to be contagious. And again, that's a very kind of a quick fix approach. You water down the rule, you say, yeah, you can come back to work. You're not really a close contact, you know, unless you were face to face for 4 hours inside. That's just a ridiculous thing. You can catch Omicron in 2 minutes. And therefore come back to work, you know, well, you get to work tomorrow, but then you've just infected all your colleagues and some of your customers. And so it's going to be even worse down the road. So that's the same kind of thinking that got us into this mess. So I don't think we've quite learned the lesson yet.
Now, completely different question, Jim, if I may.
Can I just say, before you do that, Macca, refreshing to hear these arguments from an economist.
Yes.
Because ordinarily economists take a pro-business perspective and therefore this sort of let it rip approach. So, Jim, a very refreshing discussion this morning. Well, sorry, Macca.
Tass, I'm honored to join your fine station, and thank you for saying that.
Pleasure. So, Jim, completely different question. You're in the US at the moment. Where would the US be now had Donald Trump won the election in terms of COVID? Where would the US be now? Would you all be dead?
Oh.
Well, just one tweak, Macca, to the question. I'm actually in Canada. I'm in Vancouver, Canada. I'm Canadian.
Okay.
I know we all sometimes get mixed up, but we keep a very close eye on what happens south of the border.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, obviously in America, it's been a fiasco from the beginning. You know, so that makes it all the worse now to see Australia's numbers actually worse than America's. That is saying something in terms of infection per million,
right? Yep.
And so on. Yeah. Obviously, Trump denied that it was a problem. He kind of tried to blame it on China. Promoted all kinds of false cures, didn't listen to his own scientific advice, and tried to play a political card around opposition to vaccines and that kind of thing. So thankfully, he lost the election, but much of the damage was done. And then the reality is, you know, there's a political culture, a political and economic culture in America that even with a new president, it doesn't instantly change. And so we still have very low vaccination rates in the U.S. A resistance to the normal sort of public health science-based advice that you get in other countries. For example, the U.S. Supreme Court just overturned a very basic requirement for vaccine mandates for staff in federal agencies. And now this is going to town with the anti-vax community who are saying, you know, therefore nobody needs to get vaxxed. And so this kind of very individualistic culture, suspicion of anything the government does, even when government's trying to keep you alive, has hamstrung. There's no doubt that Biden has made some important and positive changes, including a lot of the assistance that's been provided for health budgets and unemployment benefits and that kind of thing. On the other hand, America is still a mess. There's no doubt about it.
It is. Well, some commentators say that, you know, if you don't want to take the vaccine, that's fine. That's your right. But, you know, why should we as taxpayers foot the bill? I mean, that's perhaps a subject for another. That's an economic and an ethical issue, isn't it? Perhaps a comment for another day.
Well, this costs and benefits, dollars and cents angle, I think, has a role to play. For example, on the rapid antigen test issue, you know, the economic argument is clear. They should be free. Why? Because you're doing something for other people to take the rapid test, learn whether you're contagious or not, and then stay away from them.
And to help the economy.
And to help the economy, exactly.
So, and it's cheaper than the PSA testing.
Yeah.
And it's a heck of a lot cheaper than getting COVID.
Yeah.
So, you know, all of these reasons, it even in a hard calculating dollars and cents approach, the refusal of the government in Australia to do that, is just mystifying. And it's all about ideology. It's all about, you know, we don't believe in government handouts, even government handouts of a health test that can help other people stay alive. But we don't believe in it. So people will hoard it, as Barnaby said, which is nonsense.
Well, I've got three at home. I'm a hoarder.
I hope you don't have to use them.
No. We're out of time, Jim. Thank you so much for giving us the time. But thank you for your view. As Tass said, it's great to hear a view from an economist that perhaps, well, certainly, I don't think they'd put you on the Channel 9 news. So thank you for that.
I went on there once. I will claim credit for that. I did manage to sneak in there once.
It was obviously a mistake. Obviously,
good on you.
Obviously a mistake on their part.
Thank you very much,
Jim. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. Cheers. Thank you.
Absolute pleasure.
Cheers.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.